हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 32, analysis of unfavorable conditions for bhakti. Sukadev Goswami Damaras Prikit, Srimad Bhagavatam 2, 2, 4 through 5. One thing you can do is here, instead of put through 5, just put 4 and 5. Use the squiggly, the spaghetti and, like that. You use the 4 through if it's more than 1, so 4 through 6 or something. But if it's just the 2, just use and. You know, or if you have a run of them, you know, some like sometimes you have, like here, Srimad Bhagavatam 6, 1, 11, and then 15, in the, and 16, or, you know, sometimes they have this through that, so if it's this, it's just two of them, right next to each other, you put and if there's more, then you put the dash. I don't know, at least that's American, I don't know. Anyway. Huh? Europe also, okay. Yeah, it just makes it easier. Yes. When there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hand, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there's ample covering or skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? Right? So the idea is that since it's about Krishna, then what is necessary for using Krishna, you don't need more than that. If one thing is working, you don't need more. Yes.
Why is this unfavorable then?
Means that if you're having cots and beds and you don't actually require them, then it becomes unfavorable. Okay. Like that. So in other words, if you're comfortable sleeping on the floor, why have beds? If you can't sleep on the floor, you can only sleep on a bed, then you'd have a bed, but you wouldn't have two beds. You'd have just the one that you use. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing is you figure out how much you need, and that's then what you function at. So it's just a matter of working out that what is enough that actually makes it work, you know, comfortably, that's what you keep. So as one progresses, then that may change. You know, it's just like, let's say someone's a brahmachari, what little he keeps, but as a grihastha, it'll be more than that. And then the grihastha, depending on the situation, the family, and all these different things, it may expand a bit or not. But then, when it comes to the vanaprastha, then again you start cutting it back to just what's necessary. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, all the kids are there, you know, they bring their friends, and this and that, and you have all the different things, and other relatives come over, and this and that, so you have this huge house, and all these different things like that, right? Then with time, the kids grow up, they get married, they go away, so that means them and their friends aren't coming by so much, and the relatives, and they don't come by because they're either too old or dead or something, or moved to the other side of the planet. And so then you see, you reduce things. You know, because then that's comfortable. Otherwise, to maintain something bigger, it's not. You know, the kitchen also, you have a huge kitchen, so then you have some. You just find what works for you in your situation. You know what I'm saying? But if it's all right now it's like you have with some parents. Now the kids are gone. Now we can start doing something, right? You know, because they're getting in the way. Now we can have like that and have programs and this. And then it may be because then it's like that. So you have the big kitchen because you're cooking for, you know, 30 people that come over for the program. You do this so many times a week and all that. And then you're having devotees coming in from different parts of the world. They're staying with you. So then it works. Then it's just, then the facility is the same, but now it's all direct. Well, before, it was all there because of indirect. So the idea is to focus on the direct and then the facilities accordingly. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. So it's very individual. Yes.
Another point is that some people like multifunctional things, like they use one thing for many things.
Yes, yes.
And others, they need specific item for it. Not a fault.
No. It's just a matter. The point is when we say, it's pointed out by the Acharyas, Lord Chaitanya doesn't have a problem with you being comfortable. This idea that to be spiritual you have to be uncomfortable. That's not, you know, something. Well, you know, is it real surrender that I'm doing a service that I really appreciate and like doing? Isn't real surrender I do a service that I really hate and I gotta, you know, force myself. Like there's this kind of false idea. That's connected with austerity, maybe. You know, but the point is you being comfortable in your situation, the Lord doesn't have a problem with that. The problem is when that comfortableness is not connected to Him. Right? And as Prabhupada pointed out, very simple way, comfortable means not uncomfortable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just to that point. It's just like at, you know, how hot is the shower? Right? So it's not uncomfortable. It's just like, this is pleasant. Right? You go less than that, then you'll be distracted. And if you go more than that, you know what I'm saying? So it's just the right temperature, right? Or how much food you eat. It's how much you're comfortable. You eat more than that, it'll be too much. You eat less than that, you'll be hungry. So with time, these things adjust. Like you say, that somebody needs one thing like this. With time, you find that, okay, instead of 10 different items, you know, that now as they go, they're not dealing with all those things, so they only need, let's say, 6 different items, mm-hmm. you know? And then you see with time that, well, 3 of these items could be done by 1 item, and then, you know, like that, and then, so it works out. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of what works, you know? No one's criticizing Versailles because one room just has a clock in it, and that's all. Right? It's not a problem, right? Yeah. So it's just a matter of what works. Because I've seen many times is that, you know, it's simple, but they'll use different places for different things. Some people that sit in one place do everything. Other people go in different places for different things. Mm-hmm. You know, you sit there, you meet people there, you work there, you eat there, everything's there. But other people is that that's maybe where they'll sit, but they'll sleep somewhere else and then they'll eat in a different place. And when they talk to people, it's a different place. You know, so it's whatever works for the individual, as long as it maintains the standards. You know, it's not good to eat on your bed because then, unless you, that means if you're comfortable not sleeping alone at night, then you eat on your bed because then all the little bugs and that, they'll all come and join you, right? You know, so. So,
yeah. So this verse is like simple living, I think. You know?
Yes, it is. It is.
Why it is presenting in some? This is a yogi style, you know, to live in the nature.
Because then it shows actually the context. Because otherwise, why not? It's just like, let's say, have you taken the, you know, long journeys on trains in India,
yes.
right? And actually had a reservation.
Yes.
So you'll see as, you know, those who are traveling regularly on here, they get on, they hardly have anything that they bring
yes.
on the,
yes.
you know, and they just,
yes.
they can just sleep like that. And just like this, they'll just lay down on the thing, put their arm as a pillow, and they're
yes.
good.
Yes.
But when they go home, they probably have a fancier bed than any of us have. You know, like with more pillows and different things, and you know, does that make sense? So it's just they know it's there. So when they can go back. So for them, they're at home, they're comfortable. They go on the train, they're comfortable.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Well, at home we may or may not be comfortable. When we go on the train, there's a good chance we're not comfortable.
Yes.
You know, so. It's just a matter of that you do not keep more than what's necessary. So what's unfavorable is keeping more than what's necessary. So you're looking at always remember, never forget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two aspects of the same thing. So it may look as if the analysis of unfavorable looks like what's favorable and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a matter of which angle they're presenting. It's the same information. You know? Like that, because it always has to be in connection with devotional service. Because like we have the tendency, if it's unfavorable, we just talk what's unfavorable. But we don't necessarily make the reference to what is favorable or what's favorable for devotional service. So I'm talking about it's unfavorable. I'm not talking about how it's unfavorable for devotional service. I may have opened that way and then go on. Does that make sense? So it's a very common kind of presentation. So here you see is that everything, because it's Bhagavatam, it's always in connection with the Lord. So that's why it's sometimes difficult. So we see is that in this form, when they're all together, and in the order that they give it, now we understand it. That's why we removed it from the main text, because sometimes, many of them, they make sense, but sometimes you have one that's like starting to adjust something or bringing out a specific point. You don't understand how it even fits in here. But you see the context when it does, but if you take it out on its own, just as a footnote in the Bhagavatam verse, you know, in the purport there, then it doesn't necessarily make sense. So that's why we brought it back to this.
Yeah. Like some of them are like criticizing the unfavorable by presenting the favorable.
Yes.
Because it's a criticism of the unfavorable.
By presenting the favorable, or a glorification of the favorable. Or you have that one where Rupa Goswami is saying, if you'd all value, you know, your attachment to your material life, then don't go down next to the, you know, Jamuna and hear that, you know, see that boy playing his flute, yes. You know. Yes. So there's different ways that they'll go about it, you know, the different poetries and different kinds of things. Yeah. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers, being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed, or, above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why, then, do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned money? Right. So, why would you do that? It means Krishna's taking care, so why go flatter all these people that are proud of their money? You know, just to get something. It means if you're supposed to get, Krishna will give. And if you're not, you won't. You do your duties. By the performance of your duties, your maintenance is there. Like, let's say, brahmacharis. They do nothing to maintain themselves. But they're maintained. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It works. All the living entities that are around, they're all maintained. Right? Our elephants, you know, they're fat and happy, they're growing. And they eat so much, right? Like that, you know. So the elephants are happy, the ants are happy. So, point is, we'll be happy. So then, the focus on performance of prescribed duties is because it pleases the Lord. Right. So in the beginning, you look at it. Okay, we have to maintain ourselves. We have a lifestyle, so we use varnashrama because the varna maintains us. Right, and then we're situated according to ashram. So then that's the mode of goodness. But then the point you get to is, no, we're just trying to please Krishna. So Krishna says, perform your duties for him. So therefore, we're doing the occupation for the facilities it arranges for him. Right, we're situating ourselves in ashram. Is that what is favorable for serving him? So, make sense? So you start to change the mood. The activity may not change, but the mentality changes. That's why you see in the you know, the fifth, sixth cantos, these paramahamsas that are acting as kings, emperors. You know, they have their families, they do everything. But like this, is that they're unattached. So when it mentions perform your duties without attachment, it's something that can be done because you're doing for something higher. It's just like, let's say, the mother's cooking for the family. So it's done out of affection. Right? In that, she doesn't have to worry about, you know, getting involved in her technique and how well this and that. She just, is that affection is there, so she's thinking, what way to cook? What technique to use? You know, according to what is appreciated. So then that happens. Because if you're cooking according to what is appreciated, then the techniques that will get that are used. You know, it's like that. Like someone was telling me, some of these big Indian families, you know, so you got 15 people are eating there. But because you have all different kinds, you have, you know, the mother and father, you may have, you know, uncles, you know, aunts, and this and this, and the kids and that, that they're cooking one meal, but with so many varieties. You know, you boil the dal, because dal's boiled first. Then you're going to make the chaunce for it. Right? And out of the 15 people, you know, then 14 will take it like that. But, you know, the uncle, he likes it with more chili or more ginger, so you take some out and then you do something different for that. And this one, you know, what's the, you know, a lot of ghee on the chapatis. This one wants no ghee on the chapatis. This one won't eat chapatis, they'll only eat fulkas. And so, you know, like this, then you make adjustment. Is that... Sorry?
Of the affection?
Yeah, like that. Yeah? It means, I don't know now, but before this is really standard in India. Really standard in India.
For the children, only the water on the top of the dal.
Yeah, the water off the top of the dal. This one you take, it means before the chaunce, you don't put the vegetables in, you know, you steam the vegetables, you don't put them in, you just do it like that, because they eat it like that, just put a little bit. If you know cooking, these things will add maybe 5 minutes to the whole cooking time. You know, because it's something you do every day and it's not a problem. So it's anywhere where, I guess, where you'd have, you know, the big family thing, or there's the center of the culture of the family.
Not only in India.
Yes, I'm saying, wherever there's the culture and all that. But I'm just saying, I've seen it here in India.
My grandma used to cook the same.
Yeah, there's always that. It's generally always that level. The grandmas are the ones that are expert at that, because everybody else is, so, you know, they got their time is important, and so, you know. He can make his own dal, you know, like that. That's the first world solution to the problem. You want it like that? Cook it yourself. Yeah. So the point is the Lord's taking care of everybody according to their position, and so we just do our duties. And so when you do the duty, it's automatically included. Right? We're doing our duty as a grihastha to have some kind of occupation. But we're not doing it because of the money, we're doing it because Krishna says. But because we're doing the occupation, somehow or another, strangely enough, the occupation does provide money. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, so many different people from different backgrounds are working at the same place, or doing the same kind of job, and they're all getting paid. So it doesn't matter what religious background they're from, you know, what their color, creed, or, you know, all those kind of things. Does that make sense? They all get paid. So at the same time, as if you're doing this to please Krishna, then doesn't mean you won't be paid. Does that make sense? Yeah. We're good?
Yeah. Bhakti coin. Bhakti coin.
Bhakti coin. Okay, yeah. Karabhajana Muni to Maharaj Nimi, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41. O King, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers, who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, one who surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. So for the devotee, they don't need to perform any of these aspects different than their service to the Lord. So then that's why we look at what is recommended by the acharyas, and, you know, for the lifestyle of the devotee, and then we do that. And we're doing that because that's what's recommended, because we want to please Krishna. Right? So this idea where we reject what they do and accept something else, then we can't say that this is going to work, because how do we define that we've taken full shelter? If we're not following the order of Guru, how can we say we're following full shelter? Does that make sense? We make up our own system, we do all that, or we oppose this. We may not know. That's one thing. We do what we know we follow, it'll work. Like that. But if we know more and reject it, then how can we say that we don't owe? Because when you're born, you owe all these people. Just by being born, you owe them. So it's only if you surrender to Krishna, since they're all part and parcel of Krishna, you don't have to separately deal with them. Does that make sense?
Can you say we are not out about taking shelter and surrender? Do they mean the same?
Taking shelter and full surrender. Yes, yes. Same thing. Same thing. Prahlad Maharaj to Hiranyakashipu, Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5, 30, 31. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. And because they're addicted to materialistic life, they're not actually interested in these other things. There might be a superficial, you know, because sometimes it says it's a hellish condition, you might want to listen, but it's only to reduce the hellish condition. They're not actually trying to get rid of the materialistic situation. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, family life is going on and one's quite comfortable, right? Then some little obstacle comes up, some difficulty, so then we turn to, it's so disturbing, how do we get rid of this? You know, by surrender to the Lord. So they may, for that short time, add some bhakti too, just to that, but as soon as that problem goes away, then they just go back to being comfortable. So it won't really awaken this surrender to, full surrender to Krishna, that committed surrender. That's why you have the generic thing of ordinary devotee, right? Or the samanya devotee. And then you have sampradayak. Because sampradayak means you've taken up the process of bhajana kriya, right? And you're practicing because you have that determination you want to develop and go back to Godhead, right? But for others, they're devotees, it means when it comes up, they have no problem. Means they may not be going to the temple, but if you take them to the temple, they won't have problem bowing down and offering prayers and circumambulating. They know what to do. You know, it's just, it's not necessarily the main focus in their life. Does that make sense? You know, so, yeah. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home, back to Godhead, and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by other blind men miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men, led by another materially attached man, bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. So one has to follow those who are transcendental. So if we take the standards of the material world and how they're looking at it, then who are we taking shelter of? So then we're bound by those. As they're blind and it will go into a ditch, so will everybody, so will those who follow. So that's why we take the acharyas. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Brahma to Maharaj Priyavrata. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:1:17. Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he is living with six co-wives, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses. Even householder life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied learned man who has conquered his senses. Right? So if one has the senses engaged in Krishna service, then one is not deviated from devotional service. But one, even he goes from forest to forest, doesn't live in one place. Wherever he goes, then the six co-wives of the mind and the knowledge acquiring senses go, and they're always pulling in information and checking out what you can enjoy. You know? So one will not be peaceful. So the, yeah. Kapila Dev to Devahuti. Srimad Bhagavatam 331, 33, 34, 39, and 41. He becomes devoid of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, spiritual intelligence, shyness, austerity, fame, forgiveness, control of the mind, control of the senses, fortunate, and all such opportunities. One should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized the self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman, for such a woman is declared in the scripture to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. Right, so this whole, the aspect of when the materialistic mentality is there, then that's always going to be a problem. Right? So he's mentioned the senses aren't controlled, it's always a problem. So the point is that here is that someone's married because, you know, how you say it, that's the position that they're in, that's the natural position. So then they marry someone who is suitable, and so the whole idea is devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? They're marrying because the wife is attractive. That will always be a trouble. He's marrying because she's suitable. She may be attractive, she may not. It doesn't. That's not the point. The point is this suitable match. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then because of that, because if not, then because he's attracted by that, then the problem comes is he'll get more involved because his wife in the previous life was a man who was attracted, who was attached to his wife. It starts getting weird at this point.
Maharaj, this point about suitable wife and not necessarily attractive, it's practically impossible to explain.
No, you can't explain it. It's something you can explain either before they became attracted to women or after they've been around the block. You know, when you understand beauty is only skin deep, right? So then that's the
liquid beauty.
Yes, liquid beauty. Yes, yes. That. Yes.
Maharaj, I know some people who have trouble trying to get married and they're looking for a wife.
Right.
They know this aspect and then they said about beauty. They said, well, you know, if I marry someone that is not beautiful, then I will have a problem. I will be looking for somebody else if I marry someone that may be suitable, but since I'm looking for beauty, I have to be satisfied. So,
and how will you be satisfied with that beauty? Is that wife going to let you sit there and stare at her all day and she'll consider that enough service? She's so flattered that you think she's beautiful because you're so special that you thinking she's beautiful is so important. Even though everybody else on the street also thinks she's beautiful. So what's so special about you thinking she's beautiful? And that's all she needs, right? This whole thing here, wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. Right? When we say other material assets, you know, that means other material assets. It's whatever it is of whatever possibilities are there.
It is plural.
Huh? Yes, yes. You understand? So he says, you'll be looking at, but why would you be looking at? So is it the beauty that makes relationship? So then all it is you're marrying your eyes to her beauty. What about the rest of you? What about your personality? And secondly, in most cases like this, sorry to say, is the guy beautiful? You know what I'm saying? You know, does he, you know, that's the whole point. Is he on it? And he's okay. He wants to marry, you know, like a 9. What's his number?
0.
Yeah, that's good chance. But he'll be like a 4 or 5, and then he thinks, no, I got to marry. What do you mean? You know what I'm saying? So if the guy looks like Brad Pitt, okay, then you go, I'm marrying this, yeah. Because that's, they're equals. You're supposed to marry someone of equal nature. Because if she's so much more beautiful than you, and you're not...
Money.
You know, unless you're really rich, then it works also. Because the point is, for women, it's just the Pasi Kashir says, wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. If he looks nice also, that's a plus. But if he can provide all these very nicely, then, and he's not that great looking, it's okay. Because it's also, as I mentioned before, is the effulgence. I have a few devotees. I've seen myself, and I've had some others mention it. It was in context of Italians. Because Italians know how to dress really nicely. At least they used to. I don't know. They still do? Still. They dress really well. You have guys. They are... I don't know what you say. I mean, in America, we say ugly as sin. Right? But they dress so well. And smile. And they carry themselves well. And everything like that. That they're attractive. But their features are absolutely not attractive. But because, you know, just they you know, they know how to be a gentleman. And so that effulgence and all that is there. And you'll see those guys, they always are with some lady. Because they know how to deal. So this whole idea of that's we're just starting with that one, just to deflate a bit the ego here. The second thing is, if you have affection for somebody, then that's what makes it beautiful. You ever heard the saying, what's that? Possession turns sand into gold? Right? So, means the point is whoever you marry, you like that person, they're beautiful. So this whole idea is that he's going to be satisfied if it's only about beauty, to just look at his wife as beautiful, no anyone else is beautiful, he won't want to look because hers is the best beauty. So then he better marry, you know, somebody who's, what do you call it? You know, Miss World or something like that. And, you know, hopefully die within 2 or 3 years before she starts to age. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that makes no sense. All it is attachment. Point is he means there's a story of, what do you call it? I think Birbal. Birbal was with Akbar, and Akbar, I think, just had a son. He said he's the most beautiful boy in the world, and not that, and all this and that. You know, his features of this and that. And Birbal said, no, for a mother, every child is beautiful to them. Like that. He said, no, only if they're beautiful will they think it's beautiful. No, like that. And then he challenged them, say, then you show me an ugly child, an ugly baby that the mother's, you know, thinks is beautiful. So then Birbal went around, you know, and then came back later, and then brought the king. And then they came to this place outside of town, and, you know, it may have been some outcast or stuff, you know, really, really non-attractive by your standard features. Baby. And the mother was just so in love with the child. Right? So then the king understood. So if you have affection, then why won't it be there? So this idea is, I see, and, you know, it's just like, you know, the violins start playing, and the butterflies are flitting, and the rainbows are happening, and like that. And I think you throw in some harps also, it's generally quite good, yeah, like that. And then that's a worthy marriage. But how often does that happen? Because if it was common, why would it be a theme in stories? Right, themes and stories are things that don't happen so often, like, you know, fairy godmothers turning pumpkins into chariots and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? That's what the stories are about. You know, if it's just about, yeah, you know, she kind of, you know, the alarm went off and like that, and she kind of rolled over and that, and put the pillow over her head and kind of hoped that the alarm clock would go away, but it didn't, so she kind of rolled over and hit the thing like that, and, you know, like that, and then sat up and then noticed that there was a Cheeto in her hair, like that, and then she wasn't sure whether she should eat it or not, you know, because she couldn't remember what situation she was in that got into her hair like that, you know, then go like that through the whole thing, you know. Yeah, who wants to hear it?
Isn't it called a blog now?
Huh?
Bloggers?
Yes. Yeah, someone was there, had so many friends and this, and invited them all to their wedding. There's one. So one had, nobody came, and they were shocked. They were all my friends. No one came. Someone else was shocked when they all showed up. And so the whole point is that, therefore, then the second point made by Vatsyayana is, by working with someone, then it works nicely. You become attached. Right? It's just like, let's say someone gives you a gift. You don't know the gift. You don't know that thing, hadn't thought about it. But using it, you find out it's very excellent. You become very attached to it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's not that it has to, you always have to use that. You know, it's like in the kitchen, you have your favorite frying pan or your favorite spoon. Or, there's so many of them, but that one you like. So that's the whole point. By use, then you find it's there. So the Vedic recommends the second. And if the first is there along with it, great. Right? But if he goes on looking for this beauty, is that guy married now?
No.
Yeah, so that's the point. I know a god brother, you know, basically same age as me. And he started, we were discussing his marriage in the 70s. He's still not married.
Preparing.
Yeah, you know, a lifetime in preparation. Yeah.
He made his charge like 4 or 5 times.
Point is someone like that will never find the perfect girl. Because, you know what I'm saying? Because if it's based on the body, bodies are unique, so something's not going to be right. You know, she's beautiful, but, you know, the nose or, you know, this or the forehead. I remember one, it was a really good, they were totally, you know, it was a good match. But the height was, you know, they didn't like the height. And so then, you know, it didn't work out for, you know, for one, it never worked out. And for the other one, eventually it worked out. So that's the whole point is when you base it on the body, you won't, where is that, how do you know? Because on bodies, how can you tell? Because it's the mentality that matches. Because the subtle body is what creates the gross body. So if the subtle body doesn't match, it doesn't. Because point is this, you can like so many gross bodies. But it's the subtle body that's the match. Right? So if the subtle body matches, the gross body is going to naturally go along with it. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, Shastras, in Shastras statement that women are like 8 times more lusty than men. So if I, in previous life, if I was woman and I was very lusty for men who look like me now, you know. So is it my subtle body that I still have it this kind of, from previous life, in my subtle body, this, still I have this lusty expression, lusty samskaras?
The point is lust is there in the living entity because he wants to control and enjoy. So that's all wound up on the, as much as the spool of their impressions. So how you put it together, it's just a matter if you get more and more gross and like this, then it gets more and more external, then all these different problems come up. As you start to bring it more subtle, like that, then things work because masculine and feminine is an attitude. So when you see it on that subtle platform, then the forms go along with it. Does that make sense? So I wouldn't try connecting it in that way. Why bother? You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of is it grosser that there's, you know, this, in one sense there's less work. You know what I'm saying? Men and men, you can understand each other. Women and women, you can understand each other. Men and women, they'll never understand each other. So it's more work. So they want to put in less work for sense gratification. So it's about sense gratification. So it's not a dynamic principle. It may come up just in your sojourn in the material world, but it just means your attachment to sense gratification is very strong. That's all. It's just a matter of the medium. You know, someone else's power, someone else's fame, someone else's money. and come back in a few lifetimes and it'll change. So I wouldn't get too far into all those things. You should get into what is that, that unless we give up our attachment to Krishna, I mean, unless we give up our attachment to Maya and become attached to Krishna, it doesn't matter what position we're in. You know, it's like Prabhupada mentions, wet stool, dry stool. You can say the dry stool is better, but it's still stool. You know, so that's the thing. It's not yeah. Okay. Because here it says, you know, that foolishly looks on Maya in the form of a man. So that they're bringing it out from the point of the man. So if the man is Krishna conscious, then the woman having this consciousness, then it'll be benefited. So that's the whole principle, is that Maya means you think you're going to get something from the material energy. By controlling and enjoying the material energy, you'll be happy. Jarabhat to King Rahukana, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.14. In a previous birth, I was known as Maharaj Bharata. I attained perfection by becoming completely detached from material activities through direct experience. And through indirect experience, I received understanding from the Vedas. I was fully engaged in the service of the Lord, but due to my misfortune, I became very affectionate to a small deer, so much so that I neglected my spiritual duties, right? So that the deer comes and they're taking care of it, that's just because they're compassionate. That's all right. But he starts to neglect his spiritual duties. Yes. Right? And then, okay, then the deer disappears in a storm. Okay. But the point is whose deer is he? Krishna's. Krishna takes care of all the living entities. So if he just took it at this time, that it's Krishna, you know, in Krishna's hands. You know, so if the deer shows up again, fine. If it doesn't, then Krishna's taking care. Whatever happens is it's about Krishna. It's not that we're the one taking care. So he's already been deviated from his spiritual duties. And instead of just looking kind of around what's immediately there, you know, is it hiding, you know, in under this or hiding behind there, and that you know, normal standard places. It's not, then you just leave it. Because it's not, you know, it's not that he's supposed to, it's not that the sadhu is supposed to be the keeper of deers. Right? Then then it's his duty. You know, it's just like if you, you're a cowherd and your cow is missing, then you go look for the cow. Because it's your duty. Does that make sense? The cow's generally on flat land, so it's a little simpler. Right? Yeah. So therefore, he's pointing out as he attained perfection by becoming completely detached, but he allowed from the deer to sneak back in, because then you're the one maintaining the deer, rather than Krishna's the one maintaining. He happened to be, by Krishna's grace, you became the instrument to save the deer. But as they grow up, then they'll go off and do deer stuff. Right? Yes.
Like the Bhagavad Gita being the best friend, Krishna.
Yes, being the best friend. So it's that. But Krishna is the best friend. He's taking care. Because the point is if that deer is supposed to live, it doesn't matter what you do, it will. Or what happens. But if it's not, doesn't matter what you do, it won't. So.
Now, when we start to neglect our spiritual duties, the tendency is to be the enjoying controller.
Yes, enjoy controller. You know, this, they mentioned the friend, like the modern thing is, okay, being the controller is considered bad, because controller generally means you have authority, and if authority is bad, then technically you're not supposed to be a controller. Though you will try to be one, but, you know, you try to, like, whatever. So, controller is bad. Enjoyer, then, you know, then that's there. That's not something that everybody can, you know, have all the facility. You try to do as much as possible. So, but you can be the friend of all living entities. So that's the more modern kind of politically correct liberal thing, is about being the friend of everybody. But they'll only be friends of those that they want to be friends with, not with everybody. You know, they define everybody. You know, saying so. It's these things always come up. It's always about these being the friend, being the. It's one of these. You
know. And the funny thing is that those that they want to be friends, not necessarily want to be their friends.
No, no. And also the fun part is it's not necessarily that they have any friends. One who's friendly to everybody doesn't, you know, I mean, if it's a natural friendly, a congeniality, that's another thing. Yeah. But it's by philosophy, you know, that. So it's a specific mentality. You know.
Pretending.
Yes, pretending. But they think it's, you know, it's real to them, so. You know. Nard Muni to the Pachetas. Right? So that becoming, in other words, becoming so attached to someone or something that you neglect your spiritual duties, that then is a problem. Right? Nard Muni to the Pachetas, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31-21. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing devotional service of the Lord. Right? That's the possession, devotional service. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruit of activity are very proud of possessing material things. And they often deride the devotees, right? Because they don't have stuff. Oh, look at this. Well, what do you get? You know, like that. I have this. What did you get? You know, but no, they have Krishna. You know, so, you know, you have this little bit, and Krishna, you have Krishna. Krishna is everything, so that means you have everything. You know, and so the question is, what do you have? Right? Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. Right? Because it's out of pride and all that, and they're benefiting the Lord, or they're showing off, or, you know, something like this. So the Lord doesn't work. Vladmars are the sons of the demons. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:6-18. Oh, my friends, sons of demons. In this material world, even those who are apparently advanced in education have the propensity to consider, this is mine, and that is for others. Thus, they are always engaged in providing the necessities of life to their families in a limited conception of family life, just like uneducated cats and dogs. They are unable to take to spiritual knowledge. Instead, they are bewildered and overcome by ignorance. Right, so, advanced in education, but still then it's always that just very refined in their education on how to define this is mine and that's for them. Right? That's all. So it ends up in the same place as the uneducated cats and dogs. So all that effort, 20 years of education or more, and all they end up in the same position as uneducated cats and dogs. You know? So the point is, is to be absorbed in Krishna. That's the thing. Palad Maharaj to the sons of the demons. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:7, 44, 45, 51, and 52. Also, when you have 44, 45, then you just put a comma, even though they're next to each other, and only the last one, then you put an and or a dash, depending on the gap or not. Since the body itself is ultimately meant to become stool or earth, what is the meaning of the paraphernalia related to the body, such as wives, residence, wealth, children, relatives, servants, friends, kingdoms, treasuries, animals, and ministers? They are also temporary. What more can be said about this? All this paraphernalia is very near and dear as long as the body exists. But as soon as the body is destroyed, all things related to the body are also finished. Therefore, actually, one has nothing to do with them. But because of ignorance, one accepts them as valuable. Right? Because as soon as the body is finished, it has no meaning. So there's no connection, no relation. So we're falsely thinking that there's a relationship here. But in reality, there's not. Because if it's temporary, what will it do for the soul? The soul is eternal. You know, I was just thinking the other day, you know, there's this always thing people want, you know, to live forever and all that. But now, can you imagine? You're there, and, you have your family. And you're going to keep on going. Everyone's going to die. And then you're going to see your grandchildren die. You're going to see your great-grandchildren die. You're going to see all your friends die. Everybody that you've known dies until it gets to the point where nobody even knows any reference you're even talking about. Yeah. You know, so what's the point? That's the difficulty. Is that in all these, that there's consequences, so that people don't think that. They think if I have position, power, money, or anything like that, then I'll be happy. But those people, they have to live in a much smaller... I'll be free. Like, if I have money, I can do anything. The people who have money, they can only move in certain places, go to certain situations, deal with certain people, eat at certain... They can't just go anywhere. Right? So that's the thing. Material nature is so clever is that the two opposites go together. So whenever you get the one, the other one comes along with it. But... compared to the ocean of eternal happiness, they are most insignificant. What is the use of such insignificant relationships for the eternal living being? My dear friends, O sons of the demons, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming perfect Brahmanas, demigods, or great saints, or by becoming perfectly good in etiquette or vast learning. Right? So Prahlad Maharaj has already made this point. We'll sometimes think, no, but if we have so much learning, then Krishna will be pleased, or we're good in etiquette, we have to improve that, you know, devotees don't behave nicely. So, no, it's as it mentioned before, it's just that devotion. That's what catches Krishna. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord. Nor by charity, austerity, sacrifice, cleanliness, or vows can one satisfy the Lord. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. Right? Because even if you say, no, but I'm sincere in doing this materialistic activity, but it's a show because it doesn't deal with the soul. It's not connected with the living entity. So it's still a show. Right? And here, as one may say, okay, but then why does it recommend that, you know, we give in charity or sacrifice, cleanliness, vows, and all these things? Because they're simply ornaments for the devotee. The devotee has good qualities, performs good activities. They're ornaments for that. So that's the idea. So they're just something to use along with. It's like a good tool. It works nicely. But it's not about the tool, it's about the work getting done. You have a nail, you want to bang it into the wall. It's not about the hammer. It's about the nail being in the wall. It's not even about the nail. Why is the nail going into the wall? Right? To hold up a picture, or to hold the, you know, whatever it is, the covering you're putting on the wall. You know, like that. There's some other purpose there. So if it's all about the hammer, we're trying to say, no, it's about hanging the picture. No, but we have to have a fabulous hanger like that, and I can't hang the picture because I haven't gotten the right hammer and all this and that, and so many things like that. And no, you could take a brick and put the nail into the wall. The point is that you have to understand bhakti already includes everything else. That faith, that's what catches the Lord. That's what it means by having that, possessing, are fully happy in possessing devotional service to the Lord. It includes whatever else is there. So you do your service. You read for Krishna, you'll learn something. But if you read to be a scholar, it doesn't mean you'll please Krishna. And it doesn't even mean you'll understand what you're reading. You may memorize the facts, but you won't understand the point being made by the scripture.
And no realization.
Sorry?
And no realization.
And no realization, yes. Yes.
How could I distinguish that I'm pleasing Krishna just by reading it, and then at the same time, you know, in the back of the mind, you actually want to learn and to be able to, let's say, convey the message to others.
Yeah, but conveying the message to others, is that something pleasing to Krishna?
Yeah,
so you're trying to qualify to preach, so, but are you trying to become a scholar? You understand? It's still about Krishna. The point is the one's included in the other. Like you take prasad, then tasting nice food and filling the stomach, getting rid of hunger, and nourishing the body happen automatically. It's not a separate thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrisingadev, Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10-4. Otherwise, my Lord, O Supreme Instructor of the entire world, you are so kind to your devotee that you not that you could not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Mm-hmm. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Right, so that's why we say bhakti, Mr. Karma. They want karma and make for the bhakti. The karma, Mr. Bhakti, means I want bhakti, not karma. The karma comes along anyway. Huh? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Vrindavan.